I'm Jillian Johnsrud, wife, mom of six, writer, speaker, and coach. Over the last 20 years, I've sought out the ideas, stories, and tools that helped me to become financially independent, to find work that I'm passionate about, and live with more intention. I know these will empower you on your journey. Welcome to Everyday Courage. To kick off this season, I am so excited to be joined by a dear, sweet friend and the author of The Year of Less and her new book, Adventures and Opting Out. We've got Kate Flanders from kateflanders.com. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be here. This is also my first interview of the season, so I'm very excited.
One down, 150 to go?
Please no.
Your new book, Adventures in Opting Out, which I just finished, and it was so delightful. We moved into our new place, so decided to finish our porch first. So it was like my breaking in of my porch. I just got to sit there and read an entire book start to finish, which was so delightful. But I think this fits really nice into this framework of your last 10 years, because it's a book about all the things you've opted out of in the last 10 years. And so I want to read a quote that you had in your book, and then we'll kind of jump into this chat. And it was from, is it Bonnie Ware's?
Yeah.
Bonnie Ware's, her book, The Five Regrets of the Dying. I wish I had lived a life more true to myself, not the life others expected of me. And what does that mean in the context of opting out?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, I would say that I remember reading that article, gosh, like at least 5 or 6 years ago. I think it's actually from 10 or 11 years ago now, or it started with an article that she wrote. To me, that is what has made opting out actually so hard. I should say, like, opting out meaning changing paths in life. So doing one thing for a period of time and deciding it's no longer working for you. For me, one of the reasons that every opt-out I've done has been so hard is typically because of all the voices in my head and or expectations that people have placed on me. And still getting to this place where I know it's time. Like, I know it's time to make a shift. It's time to do something different. But at the same time, hearing the voices and kind of struggling between the two until I eventually get to a place where I'm like, okay, I am going to do this. But it's not easy and does not come without a lot of legwork before you get started.
Yeah. I always tell clients, change is hard and we don't like to do hard things. So like, let's just set the premise there. This is hard. And as humans, like, we have a finite capacity to do challenging things. I loved on page 33, you had a list of signs it might be time for a change. You complain about the same thing over and over. For weeks or months or years, you feel bored, ambivalent, or even numb. You feel defensive about your choices. You don't like yourself very much, but aren't sure why. You feel as though you chose this lifestyle and aren't allowed to change your mind. You want things to be simpler, more interesting. You daydream about walking away from everything completely. You distract and numb yourself. You can't stop thinking there must be another way. What does that look like in your life over these 10 years? Because there's been a lot of things that you've opted out from and maybe hit some of those points.
Yeah, so I will say the list came together both because it's my experiences and also experiences of others who I interviewed or just have connected with over the years and have had these different conversations with. I would say like the first thing technically that I opted out of years ago was I decided to stop using any drugs when I was 25. That one often just came with a lot of feelings of knowing that what I was doing was holding me back. The drugs that I was using just made me incredibly lazy, and or I partied with, but then I lost the whole next day to recovering from. And I cared more about school and finishing my degree at the time. And it just came to this decision of like every single day, the voice being like, this is such a waste of time. And like, you don't enjoy this enough to keep doing it. You care about this other thing more, with things like getting out of debt, which was my next one. That one was probably harder. I mean, I just ended up being maxed out financially and I had really no option. But that one still meant it started with a lot of shame. And if I look back and reflect, like I paid off almost $30,000 of consumer debt in 2 years. And now if I reflect on that, I used a lot of deprivation and I actually wasn't very nice to myself for those 2 years. So it was almost like I was punishing myself for those 2 years. Gosh, with the shopping ban, that was an opt-out, I guess, of just being like, I'm going to consume differently than anyone I know. That definitely came from inner voice mostly being like, you know, you can do better. Like every single month, I was so frustrated with the fact that I wasn't saving any money. I knew I could afford to save some, so why wasn't I? And a year of that, I got to this place of like, I'm so sick of hearing my own excuses. Like, I'm so sick of hearing myself say the same thing over and over again and complaining about the same thing over again. I can try something different.
Yeah.
So a lot of them have looked like that. I would say quitting drinking was similar. But then some of the hard in different ways are when life is actually kind of okay and you still know you want to opt out.
Mm-hmm.
So the most recent one is what I talk about in the book, which was the decision to give up my place and travel full time. And like, there was nothing bad going on. I liked where I was living. I liked the life that I was living. I couldn't really complain about anything. The things I definitely felt were along the lines of noticing that I was starting to feel sort of stuck or like constricted. And if people would ask me to make plans in the future, I really had this like sense that I did not want to make plans and felt kind of restricted by it. Like I would then be stuck for a longer period of time and just started paying attention to that more and more. And but it wasn't a bad one. That one was just like really noticing like the reactions in my body to being there was like, I was happy there, I guess, but like I wanted something different. So
yeah. I have a podcast episode that I think it was originally in my newsletter, this idea of how easy it is to get stuck at 6.
Mm.
Like if things are a 2 or a 3, like there's so much pain and there's not much further you can fall. Like there's very little downside left because you're so low on the totem pole. But it's at 6 that it's good. It's okay, but it's hard to make a big change.
Yeah, well, and especially because I think when things are good, the fears become a little different. It's very much you're questioning like, what am I about to disrupt here?
Yeah.
And will this be a big mistake in some way? Especially for things like the town I was living in was still within my budget, but you could tell that things were shifting and everything was getting more expensive. And I just was really concerned that I actually would never be able to afford to go back. And so again, it's like, it is that feeling of it's 6. It's like, yeah, like I don't really want to lose this, but I also like really want to try this other thing that I've been thinking about for basically since I was a teenager.
Yeah. And there's a lot more downside. There's a lot more room for it to get worse. Mm-hmm. Like what's the worst that can happen when you're at a 6 or a 7? Well, there's a lot of things.
Yeah.
That could be worse.
That's very true.
I loved what you said on page 34, though. We invent reasons for why we're staying on the paths, leading us to places we don't even want to go.
Some of that, I think, now that we're doing this comparison, which I like, or this analogy, some of that, I think, is probably more, maybe not when you're at the bottom, but maybe 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you're kind of right in the middle there, 6. Like it's, it is okay. So I had set up for myself what I was told you should do, or even just what my friends were doing, which was that I grew up in a government town and it was sort of shown and told and almost expected that, you know, your goal is to get a job with the government and that's your golden ticket and work for the government for 35 years. You'll retire with a pension. So I did all of those things. I got a job with them when I was 22. I was making decent money, like decent money for that age. And rented my first apartment, furnished it. And so by, I don't know, 25, even 27, when I finished paying off my debt, everything sort of looked good and fine. And I'd done the things you're supposed to do, but it just didn't feel, it just never felt right. Mm-hmm. I could see that I could stay on that path. I could see that I could keep doing the things that I had been doing, and it probably would have been fine. I probably would have gotten married, had kids, eventually bought a house, and all of that would have been fine. It just was not what I wanted. I was truly just following like a path that had been laid out.
In your book, it's so fun and interesting how it's laid out. It kind of goes through all of the elements of a hike, all the different stages of a hike in the part of the valley when you hit that first viewpoint and then there's a little dip before you start climbing again. I thought it was so great how you talked about some of those challenges that come in opting out, and a big one of those is relationships. And I hear this all the time, you know, other than like, which you also kind of talked about, like the idea of failure. It's failure and relationships. Like, what if people don't get it? What if they don't like it? What if they don't support it? What if they don't understand it? And I thought it was really interesting, the idea you brought up specifically about shame, you know, shame on you.
Yeah, I think the shame piece, for me, like dipping into the valley is like you've started going for a little bit. I find most of the time when you change paths, if you are picking something that you have been really interested in, typically you'll feel really good right at the start. There will be some kind of early benefit, and that is what helps you decide to keep going. And then I do find that most hikes are like this. There's a point where you have to hike down into a valley, and eventually you'll hike back up, whether it's on a different side, whether it's on your return, but you'll have to go down. And for me, there's always this feeling when I'm physically hiking where every step down, I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, these are all going to have to be steps up later. And I'm not interested in doing that.
Yeah.
And you just kind of keep going deeper and deeper. But if I think about it in terms of distance, you're also like for opting out, you're creating further distance from the path that you were on. And so I think then you start to notice that there's a bit more friction and distance in your relationships that you're walking away from. And you will have, I'm sure, one person, multiple people, you will have someone who's supportive or like mostly supportive of your choices, but there will be a lot more questions as you keep going. So I think it kind of starts with that. But the shame piece, I think it really comes up the minute you struggle at all with whatever you're opting out of. So the minute it no longer is this like extreme enthusiasm that you feel when you're at the viewpoint and it feels so amazing and exciting, and of course you're going to keep going, like as soon as it starts to feel challenging and you just want to talk about it, people see it. They seem to see it as this easy sign that it's like, okay, I can kind of shame her to come back to me and to give up on this. I think if people love us and care about us, that is actually not their intention. No one is literally sitting there and thinking how they want to sabotage you. I just don't believe that. It's just in our nature to want people to be with us and to approve our choices. And so as soon as someone's walking away and then they're like, actually, it's kind of hard. They're like, oh, come back to my choices. Come back to me. And so it can feel really awful as the person who's opting out. And it takes a lot of work, actually, I think, to be able to decipher like what people's intentions are in those moments and to figure out like kind of some new communication tactics. And if it's a relationship that you want to talk that through, or if it is one that truly feels like unsupportive or manipulative and one that you should walk away from.
Yeah. It was interesting too, for me, you said they'll even go as far as to remind you, you wanted this. Oh. I've noticed in my journey, knowing where it's going to be hard, knowing that there's going to be challenge can kind of help prepare me and the other person. So that when it is hard, I'm like, okay, we knew, we talked about this. There's going to be a hard part. And some people still don't have empathy for that. It's always, I don't want to say always, for most people adopting kids from foster care, there is a valley and there's a part that is just so unreasonably difficult that everyone in your life that cares about you goes, why are you doing this? Why have you opted into this? Like, can't you give them back? And it's really helpful to know going in, it's going to be unreasonably difficult. And you're going to need a couple people that you can say, hey, I've had an unreasonably difficult day.
Yeah.
The government, the state, the system, the process is like making demands on me that no human should have to carry. But yeah, having people who are like, isn't this what you wanted? Like, didn't you know what you were signing up for? Doesn't actually make it less hard.
Well, no. And it's also like shame is not a motivating tactic. And so the minute we let that sink in, like if we really take that on as like, oh yeah, I did want this. Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? It will actually not propel us forward in any way. It'll either make you stuck or it'll make you quit. Like if you were to truly take that on. Mm-hmm. But that's where I think it's so important what you said about having someone, whether it's the person who's coming along with you or just a supportive family member or friend, having someone that you say up front, like, this is what I'm going to do. If I feel like quitting, like, I need you to talk me out of it. Yeah. I need you to remind me why I'm doing this and why it is important to me.
Yeah.
Because not everyone will do that, and especially not naturally.
Yeah, especially with clients, I have this analogy of like dysregulation and how we do these things that dysregulate us, and it feels like jumping into a pool when you can't swim very well and you're just flailing, and it's scary and it's hard. And you need people around the pool who like will cheer you on without rescuing you. That can trust in your capability to sit in the struggle for a while. And then when you're finished, we'll help you out.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's hard for other people to watch someone struggle that they just want to pull them out the second it gets hard, the second that they're flailing, like, let me just make this stop. I'm uncomfortable with struggle. I'm uncomfortable watching you struggle.
Well, and that's also because I used to leap into that all the time. It's also just a character trait, like being a rescuer. Mm-hmm. It is just something that is incredibly natural. It is the natural sort of response, especially in a scary or traumatic situation or something disruptive, that is just some people's natural go-to. Mm-hmm. And it's like, honestly, I feel like so much of what happens in section 3 in the valley of the book is really actually learning how to have intentional conversations with people. That includes how to ask for your needs, like, or just address, like, these are my needs. Here's how you can show up for me. Here's the kind of feedback that's acceptable. Here's what I cannot handle. Like, here's what will not be helpful for me. Because you're right. It's hard enough for us to sit in our emotions and not want to take immediate action to make ourselves feel better, let alone people who care about us and want, like, are just watching it happen. It's hard.
I loved what you said in 129. When we make a choice, we don't have to choose it for the rest of our lives. And that's something, especially in the early retirement space. You know, I work with a lot of people who are making big life transitions, and they're maybe taking a year off, maybe they're retiring. Big stuff is happening. And especially in the FIRE movement, people have a tendency to try to financially plan the next 40 years as though 40 years are static and it's all going to be the exact same thing. And I always tell people, like, it's good that you have that, like, in the way, way, way back of your mind. But the reality is life tends to move in 3 to 5 year chunks. Just figure that part out.
Yes.
If you can figure out the next 3 years, because I guarantee you it'll change. Whatever the plan is, even if it was great, you loved traveling full-time in your RV, and then 3 to 5 years later, you're ready for it to change.
Yeah. I also think that this piece of it that we're speaking to actually takes more emotional work. And that work is really releasing your attachment to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that has been the work of underlying everything I've been doing without realizing it.
Yeah.
Is that I've gotten to this place, like, I cannot be attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
Because that is what either holds me back, makes me feel stuck, or you're like deeply hurt or disappointed or just feel confused and don't know what to do if it doesn't go exactly how it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
And if you can just take steps, like, of course, like in something like that, I love the idea of of course, saving the money that you want and think you'll need for the long term. But for me, I would almost go into it being like, if I'm able to work, having that feeling like I am not too proud to go back to work if I need to. That's how I feel about self-employment.
Yeah.
Like, I've been self-employed for over 5 years now, which I thought was, it'd be cool if I could do it for 6 months. Like, that'd be nice. And now it's been over 5 years, but my thought is still, if I need money, I will get a job. There's no part of me that's like, well, I'm this person who's self-employed and that's how I have to be known forever and ever. Like, no, if I need a job, I will try to get back into the job market.
Yeah. I have one client, Peter, who this year set all process goals, like no outcome goals. It was all habits and process. And even for me, I started telling people, yep, I'm going to start writing a book. And one of my author friends was like, we were chatting. And she was like, oh, okay, so are you going to do it with a big publisher, like a medium publisher, a hybrid publisher? Do you want to self-publish? Are you going to get an agent? And I was like, no. I didn't say I'm going to publish a book. I said I'm going to start writing. Two goals there. One, start. Two, write. This is my commitment. And then we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And once I get through that part, you know, in your analogy of the hike, once I get through that part of the hike, it'll be much more clear where I want to go from there. But I can't plan all the way A, all the way through Z until I start and write.
Yes. Well, and that's true. I mean, I'm still sort of sitting here being like, now that I've written two books, that's a weird statement. But what I can say definitely for this last one was that, like, I had a vision for the book, but it's different than what I thought it was going to be. That is also just because life happened and things happen and you cannot control what's going to come up. I read this in a book, I'm trying to remember the illustrator's name. I have it in my closet, which is my bookshelf here. So I'll pull it out later, but it says the greatest freedom that you have is how you respond to things.
Yeah.
The freedom is not in like sort of setting yourself up and making the plan and like going forward. And this is everything I'm going to do and how. It's knowing that you can choose what happens along the way. Like, you can adjust, and there's a lot of freedom in it.
Looking back over your 10 years, maybe I should have done the recap at the beginning, but you've had an incredible 10-year journey. You've done so many things, from getting sober to paying off debt to decluttering to writing, now publishing two books, being self-employed, traveling. Like, a lot has happened in 10 years.
Yeah.
It hasn't been, you know, my motto for the podcast is, you don't have to be perfect to make progress. And I love that in your journey is that it's not perfectly linear. It's not like, here's the flawless step-by-step plan that you can exactly replicate. It's just people who keep going, putting that one foot in front of the other and continuing to make progress, continuing to grow.
I like that, though. It reminds me, though, the recapping the opt-outs and how big the last decade has been. It just made me think, like, I could never have imagined any of this stuff. And one of the things my friend Shannon said, so my friend Shannon McNay edited both the proposal and the first draft of the book. And one of the things that she said when she read it was that it reminded her of kind of her own life and things that she's done differently. And she said she would have shortchanged herself if she had just stuck to the path.
Yeah.
And I really resonate with that. It is totally scary. Like, it's scary to step off and to sort of dream up what your own path looks like, or just to trust that you know what you want. And just because other people are telling you differently, like, it takes a lot to make your voice louder, or can. Mm-hmm. It did for me. But I also, like, if I had stayed on the path I'd been told to take, I can't imagine now a life without all the different experiences and challenges even, and everything that I've tried. And yeah, I just can't imagine it. I would have shortchanged myself for sure.
So I'm going to wrap it up with this idea of what's been the conclusion to your 10 years of growth. And it should be probably a question that I ask you, but instead I'm just going to pull a quote here and we'll see if that maybe sounds like your answer.
Yeah.
It's the moment the adventurous part of the journey is over and you are who you set out to be.
Yeah.
Looking at your journey, I see, if I'm going to say, here's the big accomplishment that Kate did over 10 years. She became who she was meant to be.
Mm.
You're so much more fully yourself. You've grown into the exact right way you should have grown.
Yeah, I think there's a line somewhere else in the conclusion or somewhere. It's like, I think it's actually really about becoming more of who you already were.
Yeah.
Because I think an intentional life isn't one where you sort of dream up this like fantasy version of yourself. I think it's actually doing what you want to do and doing what you are inherently capable of figuring out how to do. And so I do just feel like myself now, and that's not perfect. Like, I don't have perfect words or a perfect description or live up to any kind of perfect standard or whatever, but I feel like myself, and that is a gift to be able to show up as yourself and just to feel comfortable with that.
I was talking to another blogger friend. I might make it an episode in this season. We'll see. But how I feel like in 10 years ago was kind of that tilling under, plowing under of so many things in my life. I feel like the journey over the last 10 years is coming back to who I was. I feel like I had a moment in my childhood that I was just myself. Before the world told me I shouldn't be that, before society said it wasn't good enough or it wasn't quite right, or they would all feel a little bit more comfortable if I could just like fit into the box a little bit better. Before I got all of that messaging, I was just me and it was okay. And I was okay with it. And it's been 10 years of being like, okay, who was that person? And I want to kind of go back a little bit, hopefully a little wiser, hopefully a little bit smarter, but come back to the essence of who I was before I forgot and got confused.
Yeah. I love that.
Oh, Well, friend, it has been so delightful to see you. And I hope everybody, Kate's new book is Adventures in Opting Out, which I love that so much. I love the intentionality. I love the word adventure. And there's a great backdrop of hiking. So my Montana self very much appreciates this. But you can find the book, I think it's going to be sold everywhere.
I think so.
Everywhere books are sold. So go find that copy. She also has a fantastic newsletter, which I'm sure you can sign up on kateflanders.com. It's so random and sporadic. It's like someone sending you a gift in the mail that you were not expecting.
Oh, I like that.
And that's very delightful.
I love that.
It's like, oh, I have a package. I wonder who this is from.
Oh, that's so nice. That's like the best feedback.
Oh, thank you so much for chatting.
Thank you. And also, thank you for the quotes. It was fun to revisit some of that stuff. So thank you for just sharing those all throughout.
And I think this interview, just Kate's stories last 10 years, is such a beautiful example of the fact that you don't have to be perfect to make progress. You just have to be a little bit more courageous every day because adventure awaits.
If these ideas are what you needed today, hit subscribe. But if you want to go further, go to choosefi.com/courage. We've created free resources to walk you through this journey, to take these ideas and to transform them into action and results in your life. Invite a friend, your sister, a partner to join you on this adventure. Get your free resources at choosefi.com/courage. Let's do this together. Let's get started.